The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. Greg Gerken is our guest. He is head of commercial real estate at TD Bank, and he's here to talk about a new trend he is seeing in the housing market regarding millennials, those U.S. citizens ages 18 to 34 years old. Greg Gerken, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Mike.
Appreciate you joining us. I'm going to first of all point to Zillow. If anybody knows about homeownership, it's got to be Zillow. Zillow reports that millennials, and again for our listeners, that's the age group 18 to 34 years old, now account for 42% of today's home buyers, which is more than any other generation, more than baby boomers, more than the Gen Xers right now. And my understanding is that you are seeing an influx of millennial buyers at TD Bank. Tell us about that, Greg.
Well, I think it's been an interesting trend to watch. Millennials, if you want to use that phrase, we've seen that buyer, first of all, go through this interesting transition since 2008, starting with graduating with too much debt into a job market that just wasn't there, found themselves paying off student debt and living in their parents' basements. You know, if they could afford an apartment, they rented, usually with lots of friends, and the experience was probably much like it was in college, living with roommates and in stacked housing, so to speak. And I don't think it's ever been, there was a position in the marketplace for a while and a position people took that millennials didn't want to buy. And through TD Economic surveys and some of the other reports that we've read, it's not that people didn't want to buy. Either they weren't ready, either because they couldn't afford to, or they were putting off that decision. And now I think you're seeing this backlog, if you will, of demand that has now reached a point of seeing much more activity in the marketplace, where now either living with my parents too long, or having saved up enough money, or paid off my student debt, or I got married and I don't want to live in the city anymore and don't want to raise my kids in that environment, is starting to create this move towards home purchasing.
Well, you know, you make an interesting point that they've been living very much like they did in college in some cases. And, you know, when you're at that age, it's very easy to kind of just sack out in the basement or on a sofa. It's when you're young and durable, it's pretty easy. But I would suspect that over time, they come under pressure from their parents. The job market has improved. I mean, how much of this is employment opportunities? How much of it is, and maybe you only know this anecdotally, I don't expect that you necessarily have statistical information on this, Greg, but I wonder how much of it is that, geez, I'm finally gainfully employed versus parental pressure. I know some young people who are gainfully employed and they love the idea of being able just to sock the money away rather than go out and having to underwrite their own housing.
I would agree, and many of them witnessed home ownership probably worked in reverse for their parents because their parents lost tremendous equity in their home, maybe had to put off a retirement decision or a move, and were effectively locked in place because they owed more than what the value of their house was. So, we're a very big believer in the trend starts with having a job. And real estate demand is driven by employment. If you go back to the downturn, you know, why were kids graduating and ending up in their parents' basements in the first place? You know, why were they moving in with their friends? Because they couldn't afford anything else. They didn't have jobs, or the scarcity of good high-paying jobs was such that, you know, the financial industry lost hundreds of thousands of jobs. That trend has completely changed and then some, and we're at record unemployment right now. However, I don't know that people are employed at the level that they'd like to be employed, but you know, certainly in the home buyer market, you're starting to see that trend towards, I might have put off buying, But I kind of like that idea of living, you know, the lifestyle that I grew up in, you know. Many people think that there is just one trend, and it's urbanization, but many of the housing studies more recently have said, no, kids today, they want to live the life that they grew up in. They want to raise their kids in that same way. But I think one of the drivers of it is also they're looking for housing with amenities, meaning that live, work, play quality of life is hugely important. And I think that's also what's driving some of the decisions here.
Now, you had mentioned, I think you said, or at least meant to say, we're at record employment right now. Is that right, Greg?
Yeah, the unemployment levels are about as good as they get. It would suggest that we're at full employment.
Okay, so you know, there's the baseline right there, the job, as you said, that, that it all begins with the job. There were people though that really were indicating that there's a psychographic difference among millennials, that they actually think differently. And a lot of them, unthinkable when I was growing up, a lot of them don't even have driver's licenses. You know, that we couldn't wait to get our learner's permit and start driving a car. So it's very foreign to me, the idea of young people putting off getting a driver's license. So I'm just, again, this is anecdotal on your part, but do you see some psychographic differences with this generation, or you just believe that they're going through the pretty much the same pace as previous generations did by and large, and they're going to fall into the same sort of patterns?
No, Michael, I think you bring up an interesting point. We were talking about this earlier in an interview. Amber and I were having a conversation on the way over, if you take a look at all these converging trends, the driver's license being one of them, you know, the move towards urbanization, and then wanting to, to have a walkable, work-life environment. It's not just the millennials. That you could also say that with the retiree baby boomer generation. Many people are surprised that baby boomers are retiring, selling their houses, and moving into urban areas. That has actually opened up some of the inventory for some of the millennials to move into the suburbs. So there's a lot of dynamic shifts going on right now, and it's hard to, and I don't think it's appropriate even to generalize, because I think for each cohort, you've got a little different decision driving it. We look very closely at the affordability index of housing as well. And, I think that's like the next big crisis that's going to happen. And that's that most of what has been built and what's been delivered into the market is at an affordability level that you get out of the top 25-30% of wage earners, and it's just not in reach for people. And they become either renters by necessity or trying to find that that starter home is very, very difficult. And that is very, I would say, geographically specific as well. Probably most pronounced in the gateway cities and the coastal cities. And you have the total opposite trend in the Midwest, where I don't think the price of a house has moved in 15, 20 years.
I'm glad you bring this up, the housing prices, because it has been so difficult for people to afford homes, particularly young people, and it's been really driving rent prices up. So renting was really getting unaffordable. In fact, I talked to one executive who said the rent levels right now are just unsustainable. They can't stay up that high. And you could actually pay a smaller mortgage than what you pay for rent. But of course, the big problem is that down payment and getting it to a level where a TD Bank or any other lender would say, okay, you've got sufficient skin in the game and the loan size is not too large. So what are you seeing in terms of how are they getting into the market? Are parents maybe giving a little early inheritance to their children so they can get the down payment together? And also, the other thing I wanted to add to that, Greg, just to make it a two-part question is, whether we are talking about mostly single-family homes that are being bought, or are these millennials moving more into the condo townhouse type of format?
Again, I think it's a little bit of all of the above. the depending upon the personal situation. I think if you're looking for that urban environment, you're probably ending up in a condo, or a row house, and that's the lifestyle you want to have. Anecdotally, I know from my nephew and a few of his friends, at a certain point in time, the urban environment wasn't where they wanted to raise their kids, and they weren't raised that way. So, you know, they're moving now to the suburbs and going for the single family home. In many cases, you know, they're lucky enough that mom and dad can help them out with a little bit of a down payment. In other cases, it's the two income family that it takes to be able to afford a home. You know, at the other extreme, you have the renter by necessity, and folks have no choice, and that's really what's driven the multifamily demand. One of the other demographic numbers that we watched very closely during this period from 2008 to today was the total housing starts on one hand versus the household formation number on the other. And that gap between household formations and the single family housing starts has been pretty wide. And I think that is what has driven the multifamily demand to these levels that, if I turn back the clock and listen to some of the predictions as early as 2014, 2015, it was, there's so much multifamily housing, the supply is at record numbers, you know, we're going to run into this cliff, you know, very shortly, and then it didn't happen. Everything got absorbed. And then it didn't happen again, and everything got absorbed. Now we're first starting to see going from 2016 through 2017, a slow increase in vacancy, and in some markets you're starting to see absorption levels slow down, and across many markets rent increases have slowed down pretty significantly.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing as well. So, you know, some of the material that I got from your organization says that millennials are seeking quote-unquote amenity-based housing. What is amenity-based housing?
By our term, amenity-based housing, you know, starts with, you know, first of all, the things that are important in the house, which you know, go beyond you know, the washer, dryer, the refrigerator, stove. It also, to your point earlier about with and without a driver's license, you know, if you can find a house that's walkable to mass transportation, that's an amenity that that becomes very important. The idea of spending your life commuting is probably less attractive unless you absolutely, for lifestyle reasons, have to move, you know, far enough out to afford. And I also think it's what's driven the urbanization trend, whether it be for the millennials or for the other end of the demographic spectrum, the baby boomers. You know, people don't mind living in the city. You know, in fact, like the idea of being able to live in a neighborhood where they can walk to stores, walk to restaurants, walk to work if they have to, or there's access to public transportation, because in many cases they don't have a car, they don't want a car. And you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, some of these converging trends. I look at you know, who would have thought 2 years ago that there'd be self-driving cars actually on the road and self-driving trucks coming. You know, there are a lot of trends here that are going to change how people live, how they get around, and eventually, you know, with advances in the same technology that drives a car, the advances in artificial intelligence are going to have some impacts on how people work.
Indeed. Now, let's talk a little bit about the amenities within the household. Oh, is there a particular amenity or feature or two that millennials are particularly looking for? And maybe this is distinct to their generation versus the rest of the population. What do they what's paramount to them?
Well, I'll again just differentiate between maybe multifamily housing, but when we talk to some of our multifamily developers, you know, some of the trends that have moved very, very fast for them was, you know, originally a smaller format apartment was a way to make a an apartment unit more affordable. So again, to be able to afford, you know, their living the ability to live in a new apartment, you know, you had to rent less square feet, and because then the total rent you paid, which is really what matters, how big a check do I have to write each month, is how they were able to access that apartment. But in exchange for a smaller apartment, one of the amenities that everyone looked for was a lot of common area space. You know, total Wi-Fi access in the building. Cable was even less important than Wi-Fi access because, you know, so many people could just stream TV shows. When I've talked to some developers about what would you have done differently, almost universally we hear, we should have increased the size and the number of people we have on staff to handle deliveries.
Wow, a lot of online shopping.
Online shopping, you know, more packages coming into a building than what the staff can handle, and no place to store it. It was like an interesting trend that no matter how fast they, you know, thought ahead and designed, you know, larger mail rooms and larger drop boxes, you know, to the point now where Amazon's giving away these Amazon lockers, you know, that, you know, the drivers can put a code in, send it to the recipient, you know, and the code is how they access the delivery, and, you know, and they're doing that for free in buildings now. So what they used to install as an amenity, now Amazon's willing to install and say, okay, we'll do that for you. So, you know, that's an interesting trend that we've seen. You hit the nail on the head earlier when you talked about people, you know, that don't drive. You know, if you don't drive, it limits your choices in terms of how far you live from mass transit, you know, or from work, and what kind of neighborhood you choose. You know, so, you think about all of those elements and different aspects of those, and different amenities will appeal to different people. But I think if you talk to some of the home builders, what they're finding is that big, huge estate home, you know, on 2 acres of land that you have to commute is less desirable. It's less affordable. It's not selling as fast and not appreciating as fast. You know, it doesn't mean you don't have the few that want the large estate, but in terms of mass appeal, it's less appealing.
So just to summarize, so with regard to location, they either want to be near mass transit or near their place of work or both. They're trying to get rid of that commute if possible, particularly if they don't drive. So location is very important as well. Now, what about the bankability of millennials? What are you finding there, Greg? Just kind of generally, how bankable has this generation looked to your bank and to other lenders?
It's really interesting because in a way you could almost turn it on its head and say, are banks what millennials want? You know, and one of the things as a bank that we have to be very cognizant of is that in many ways the way in which the current generation and future generations access a bank is changing very fast. You know, it used to be you built stores, people did their banking within the walls of a store, and suddenly now, you know, I think there's probably a generation of kids who've never even stepped into a bank branch or a store. You know, they look up their balances online, they transfer money online, some of them don't even use their bank account, they do it, you know, using Venmo, PayPal, you know, ride sharing, all different, you know, forms of payment that that don't involve a bank any longer. So I think when we take a look at that generation, it's how do we appeal to them and stay relevant to them, because they are very bankable. They're especially, you know, when you take a look at they're highly educated, they've waited longer to buy houses, their credit is good, they've you know, paid for college. You know, they're very much a bankable and a desirable client going forward. You know, the question is how do we keep the bank relevant to them?
Yeah, and you know, it's amazing how rarely I go inside a bank. Even at my age, I've downloaded the app and I can make deposits, just taking pictures of the front and the back of checks, and really don't even have to use an ATM machine anymore. It's amazing what we've been seeing in terms of banks really keeping people away from the brick and mortar and lowering their costs. I'm sure the banks are very pleased to see a generation that's happy not to make it so labor intensive for the banks as well. So I have not met you, Greg, in person. I don't know your age, but do you have a child or two that you're going to have to give the boot to here pretty soon? Any personal
Well,
experience
actually,
there?
I'm fortunate to have three who have already given me the boot. They're all, gainfully employed out in the world, and the youngest one just recently moved into New York City, and her lifestyle choice was to be in the city. So I cover the whole gamut. I've got one who's the suburban mother. I've got one who is in a southeast urban city that's in a very, walkable neighborhood. Works from home, as a matter of fact. The company that she works for is very flexible in that way, and actually encourages them to work from home. And then I've got one who has a traditional job in New York City, who wants that urban lifestyle, in a neighborhood, and has no problem giving up space and amenities to be able to live in New York and live that lifestyle. So I've kind of living vicariously through almost everything we've talked about here through the lens of having three very different children at very different stages of their lives. But to answer your question, I've gotten a huge raise, the second they were all done with college.
Yeah, there you go. Interesting. So you definitely get a grade A on parenting, since all of your kids have become self-sufficient, and just the way we all hope children turn out. Before I let you go, Greg, let me ask you about one other property type here, because there's also been so much talk about how millennials are changing the office market as commercial developers adapt to cultural and environmental values of that generation. Are you seeing an impact being made by millennials as to the way office space is now being configured or even built from the beginning?
I mean, you'd be crazy not to have lived that experience. But I think if I back up in time, it actually started well before the millennials came along, when a lot of companies were looking to downsize and make the office a little bit more efficient. You take a look at what computers have allowed us to do in terms of workspace sharing. The traditional large office with all the offices around the outside of the building have been completely reversed. The square footage numbers per employee went from, roughly, I think the calculation used to be around, 200 to 250 square feet per employee down to 125. Collaborative workspaces. The pendulum has swung that way, and I think the biggest change that I've seen with millennials is they want to work in cool places that feel good, as well, and have some of those other amenities, and that spillover from that Silicon Valley, work environment is now spread to a lot of other cities. I also think a lot of companies have become much more cognizant of their ongoing operating efficiencies as well. And so they've driven much of the change in the way in which office space is not only utilized in design, but also the types of buildings they want to be in. A lot of office stock is so old and outdated that it's not even economically feasible to convert it to today's standards. It's actually more valuable to be converted into multifamily, living space. We've seen that happen with hospitals in some urban areas. We've seen it happen with older office buildings. Some of the coolest loft apartments are in old industrial spaces, and a lot of that office space is being replaced by these highly efficient column-free floor plate buildings. The operating efficiencies of the building and the environmental impact and environmental footprint of the building is much less. So, you know, I think when we were talking earlier about all these converging trends, I think the millennials' impact on that, on those trends, is just a continuation of something that had started and become a longer-term cyclical trend.